Hey, Loco sports fans. When you hear Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, think advanced, local, and specialized therapy care. The team at Horizon prides themselves on the diversity of their 30-plus specialized treatment programs, including advanced sports medicine and orthopedic care, as they offer the area's only Alter-G treadmill and have an indoor heated resistance therapy pool. For nearly 15 years, Horizon's outpatient, physical, occupational, and sports medicine programs have been addressing the needs of athletes, weekend warriors, and their fans. At any level, at any age or stage, their specialized therapists and athletic trainers are ready to get you back in the game. Visit HorizonRehabilitation.com for more information or call 843-671-REHAB. That's 843-671-REHAB. Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, proud sponsors of LocoSports.com.
This is the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast. Here are your hosts, Justin Jarrett and Wes Kerr.
Hey, Loco sports fans. Welcome to a special edition of the Loco Sit Down. We're kicking off Black History Month this February with an interview with an absolute legend here in the Loco, Coach Herbert Glaze. Your bio, we could spend all day just going through your bio, Coach, because you went to the old Robert Smalls High School way back in the day, pre-integration, came back after college and started teaching at Buford High and started the track program there. And man, the things you've done since then. 40 plus years as the coach, you got the track named after you now, 20 years on the Beaufort County Council, you've started advocacy groups, you've served in just about every way you can serve your community, coach. And I'd just love to kind of hear from you that where that spirit of service came from and at what point you realized that you were going to kind of dedicate your life to serving your community.
Well, it started early in my childhood. In the community, really at church and looking at my father, who was a leader in that capacity. He, at that time, was a deacon, then became an elder in the church. But he was always community-oriented, helping the community, trying to do what he can to make a difference. So I was more or less inspired by what he was doing and wanted to do basically the same thing on a bigger level. His was more or less community oriented, but I wanted mine to be start from an endemic situation like the community, perhaps goes to an epidemic within the nation, then a pandemic to the state. So go out around the world. So trying to make a difference any way that I possibly can.
Coach, it's such an honor to speak with you today. If you'd like, I'd love to hear more about your upbringing and your experiences growing up as a Black man in America.
Okay. Growing up, in the Burton area, it was, I guess, even call it a challenge, but I know that it was during the time of segregation. And I attended the graduated from Robert Smalls High School. And at that time, there were one white school that was Buford High, Tidal Waves. And then you had two Black schools, which was Robert Smalls and St. Helena Eagles. And we definitely was not equal. And that, when they have transportation like buses and whatnot, when the Buford High School utilized the buses and whatnot, when they received new buses, we got their old buses. And then the same thing with books and what have you. We would get the books from Buford High to be dispersed to Robert Smalls and St. Helena. And sometimes you look in those books, they had certain discriminatory things in the book, knowing that they were going to be handed down to us. So we would see the racial marks that was in the books. But we undergo a lot of changes and made a lot of progress in Buford County. And although segregation was here, I believe that integration was first started in the Buford County area. Because later on, as I go different places within the county, within the state, I noticed that this thing is still going on. I remember as a coach when I first started teaching, I was at what you call in Charleston, the Wando area, but it was called Moultrie High School at that time. And we were getting ready to play them and wanted to go to the restroom. So I got off the bus and some of the white coaches went to the restroom. And when I got ready to go in the restroom, the guy said, oh, it's not working. The restroom was out of order. And then there was a little white boy came behind me and he pointed to where the restroom is at. It was right there. So I said, well, this here, this still exists, you know, in some areas, but Beaufort County was more or less making an attempt to become integrated as such. And then once we, and I got to Beaufort High, I started in 1972, here at Beaufort High and was working ever since. But I evidently wanted to have a, what Ms. Summers, my principal, allowed us to do is set up a pillar. The pillars are columns of the schools and how they actually formed. A lot of students do not know how we got to this particular point. And there's a uniqueness of Beaufort High School because during the 70 was the last year of segregation. And during that time, 71 and et cetera, we had one big school and that was Beaufort High. And Beaufort High encompassed from north, south of the Broad, north of the Broad, all the way back. That mean Port Royal, Dale, Sheldon, Seabrook, Land's End, Hunting Island, all went to Beaufort High. So we had what's called double sessions. We had, I think, from in the morning from 7 to 12 was the juniors and seniors, and from 1 to 5 was the underclassmen. So we did that for approximately 3 years until the Battery Creek High School was built. But the pillows that we have in the school here at Beaufort High shows what transpired after the schools were integrated. And what we have in the, at the school is, you'll see the pillows as you walk in, you see four pillows. One represents Beaufort High School, which is the what we are now. The other shows the Beaufort High tidal waves. One show Robert Small's Generals, and the other show St. Helena Eagles. Now, what's the amazing thing about this is simply this. We had a great big ceremony here in the school, and we invited other people to come down to look at it. But the point is this. The school, Beaufort Tidal Waves, you know, when they met with OSHA and the Board of Education, they had to come up with something that they could do to make sure that each school is represented in the naming of Beaufort High School. So what they did was Beaufort High, they got the name Beaufort High from Beaufort High School, which meant that they took away the tidal waves and named it Beaufort High. That's why we call it Beaufort High. The mascot came from St. Helena, which is the Eagles. So they took the mascot from St. Helena, which is the Eagle, and then the color, green and white, came from Beaufort High School. So all those pillars out there represent all that coming together to form this particular school here. So that's why we at this particular point, and that's why we try to make sure that it's never forgotten how we got here. And I hope that one day they will infuse into the curriculum of ninth graders coming from various schools here so they can know how we got to this particular point. One of our teachers that work here was teaching here for about 17 years, and she did not realize what had happened, what was going on, although she is a member of the community, and she went to Beaufort High School, but did not know the history. So we want to teach this, but segregation was real, and there was a lot of struggle, a lot of challenges, but nevertheless, we overcame it.
Yeah, no doubt, Coach. I think it's a little, it takes people aback a little bit, especially if they're new to the area or to the South in particular, to understand just how recent that history is. And, you know, there's a lot of folks like you who have been around and attended schools during that segregation era and now are shaping our schools in the integrated era. And I think it's a little shocking to people how recent that was. But how important is it for guys like you while you're still here, you know, to pass that on and make sure that we educate this next generation so that, you know, we have that institutional knowledge to pass on to newcomers and people who maybe aren't as aware of it. And I think that's a great idea with the curriculum, but just personally, how important do you feel it is for folks of your generation to make sure that they pass this on to the next generation so they don't forget this history?
They definitely do. You know, they have to, it really has to transcend, it has to go beyond, and it can't stop. Make sure that it's continued to be kinetic, that it's passed on, it's in motion, and keep moving from one generation to the next, and that we comprehend and we understand this. When I was coming up, back in the middle schools and high schools, especially, I would always find myself talking to elderly folks. I talked to the older folks, because from the older folks, you get the knowledge as to what's going on. They give you the history. My brother passed a few years ago. He was 97 years old. And I would always go talk to him to get the history and to understand what's going on, because this is, it's important. And to have history that's potentially just stay there and no one never tried to get it activated or let people know what's going on. You know, when we look at it, we have to do all that we actually can to make sure that the history is passed from one place to another. I am the one of the elders at my church. And when I go to a funeral and I have to speak and there's a old person that has passed on or died, I say to them, this another library has closed. And what I'm saying to them is that I hope that we as individuals, while they were living, we talk to them, we question them, and got as much research as we possibly can about ourselves and about our community from them, because that's the knowledge that they have. And we want them to pass it on to us so that we can pass it on to our kids and they pass it on to my grandkids. So I always say, when a person die, you know, another old person, another library has closed. So it's very important that we take this information and that we let them know, you know, from whence we came and from what where we are going, because it's extremely important that we do this. I think, you know, it's one of the high ranking things that we must do. We must pass this knowledge on to others so that they may know, so that it could not just lie dormant and no one knows anything about it.
That's right, Absolutely. Coach. That's why we asked you to open up your library today, buddy.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Wes.
Absolutely. Educating our future leaders is just so, so important. And on that topic, as you grew up as a young man, who were your most admired people? Who were your biggest role models, both locally and nationally, that kind of shaped your life to help you achieve this incredible success for so many years?
Well, one, I would say my father, like I said earlier, because he was one that, you know, that worked diligently. My father died back in 1988, he was 100 years old. And he moved from Allendale to Beaufort, South Carolina. And coming from Allendale, I think they made like 3 cents an hour. So he came here to make 5 cents an hour. And he told me that his journey was, they were more or less walking. They walk from Allendale to Beaufort. And he said that he got at a certain point, someplace in Yamasee or what have you, after walking so much, that there was a white guy that picked them up and put them on the back of his pickup. And he brought them from Yamasee to Burton. And when they got off the truck, not knowing what they were gonna do or how they wanna make it, they survived. But the amazing thing about this is that he said on the truck, the white gentleman that brought them here, his name was Burton. So that's how, you know, Burton got his name. But I was inspired by him because he was able to get along with the whites as well as the blacks. Especially, my father had a whole lot of white friends, a whole lot of them that really loved him. For example, there was two gentlemen live on in village, on Polk Village, that was a good friend of my father's, and they would go and hunt hogs on Lemon Island, and they would bring hogs for my father to actually clean, and he would do that. And from that, they even had live hogs that they bought. And my father would eventually raise them and do this and that. But my father had a mule. A mule name was Daisy. And everyone in the community, everyone in Beaufort County knew that my father was on this wagon, and he loved the mule and this and that. And one night the mule got out of the stable. And my mother told him, my father was concerned as to what happened to the mule. So my mother told him, well, you need to call at that time, Sheriff Wallace was the high sheriff, Sheriff Wallace. And she said, you need to call Wallace or hire a patrol and let him know what's going on, because if a car hit that mule, they could sue us for everything we have. And my father did that. And about a half hour later, Wallace called and said, Glaze, we find your mule. He's up on by Abogadie Creek, out on 21 Trask Parkway. But what happened is my father went there, and the mule neck was decapitated from his head. And he was hit by a Mustang. And the mule was killed, as we know. And the car was damaged. So my father was there crying about the mule and whatnot. And the guy was saying, what about my car? And at that time, the high sheriff said, well, don't worry about it. You'll take care of your car. Told my father to go ahead home and don't worry about anything, because you already called us and let us know what was going on. So my father called a good friend of his, white guys, two of them, and explained to them what had happened. And at that time, they told him, because my father was a very religious man, he'd go to church every Sunday. And they told him, said, Glaze, you go to church and everything will be all right. My father went to church. And when he came back, they had already gone to Allendale, purchased him another mule, and bought it back for him and had him in the stable. They said, Glaze, try this mule out and see what it does. Well, quite naturally, mule was a little too fast for him. But at that time, they took him back and got him another mule. But I'm just trying to show you, even as though it was a lot of racism going on, how they had support. There was another individual by the name of William Parnell, who was an entrepreneur. He lived in the Burton area. His kids were graduate from colleges. And every morning, we had about 25 or 30 kids that catch the bus in that area. And he would make certain that we have his heat. He would have an old wood stove there. He'll have heat for us to warm up. And we never had to worry about it. We were never in the rain, never in cold weather. And the school would tell any bus driver, when you go to Parnell, although you may not see nobody outside, you need to stop, because you will see them coming out the store. So he was an entrepreneur. He worked hard. He worked diligently. He did a whole lot for the community. And I was inspired by him because, he showed us how to go about, purchasing land on Sheriff's Hill or what have you, try to purchase people land and make sure they get their land back if they can't, do it themselves. However, they would have to pay you your money back, but you're not charging them the full price. You're just charging them what you had to pay. So I think that was a really good gesture on his part to do that. But there were quite a lot of influential individuals that I, raised up with who was in my community at that time, because one amazing thing is that I saw was you had big families at that time. I'm the youngest of 11. You have big families. And the amazing thing about it is all my friends who I raised up with, including my mother, they never worked. They were at-home moms. And I guess with that many kids, you got to be at home, but they were never out there working or whatnot. Their fathers or the husband was the man's support. And I look at it now and see how they struggled and how they did what they were doing, and now how their kids have blossomed, has grown up, and is doing well. So it says a whole lot, you know, for man at that time, and they actually took the lead in their family, and they stood up and did what they could do. So I just say that, you know, in our community, you know, we were poor, but I didn't know we were poor because we never wanted for anything. And my father never told us that we had to stay home to work in the field or work, do this and do that. We all were entitled to an education. And all my siblings, I'm the youngest of 11, all of them had the opportunity, if they wanted to go to college or trade school. And I was one of the first to actually venture into a four-year college. One, my sister who passed, went to a trade school. But we all had that opportunity, and he never denied us that, to get an education and do the best that you can with your education.
Coach, you went on and did that at Benedict College up in Columbia, and then came back home to teach and coach here at Buford High School, which was obviously a very different place than you left it. And you were able to start the girls track program there and have just tremendous success, and then took over the boys eventually and have had success there as well. 12 total state championships, if I'm counting right, and I believe 28 region titles. You're in a couple halls of fame. You've done just about everything you can do as a coach, I think. But I think the most important thing to you from everything I've read and heard is those kids that you've sent on to college and giving them that same opportunity that you had, you know, helping them find financial assistance, whether it's through athletics or otherwise. Just talk a little bit about, you know, how important that part of your mission has been to your life, and the how rewarding it has been to send those kids on and see them further their education and get on in life.
Yeah, normally when doing interviews as such, I don't necessarily, you know, share what my accomplishments were, because I know when I interviewed several years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, in another paper, and they saw my bio, and they were asking, well, why don't you, you know, toot your own home? But I don't necessarily believe in that, because it's not about me, it's about the kids. And they said, well, you were nominated for the National Girls Track Coach of the Year in 1989. I said, yeah. And then they said, you had a trifold that was published from Princeton University. What do you contribute for your success in track in a culturally deprived area? I'll never forget that. And then, like I said, as Coach of the Year in 2002 and 2015, Beaufort County Coach of the Year for 20 years. And then I was inducted into the South Carolina Association Hall of Fame in July 2006, and then inducted into South Carolina Coaches Classic Hall of Fame in 2007, and then inducted into the Beaufort County Hall of Fame in 2008. But I told them, with all that, you know, and why I continue to do this, is to make certain that students are rewarded for what they do, that they are rewarded for rendering service and showing to be a contributor to your program, and they need to be rewarded for it. So I have, right now we speak, about 64 female athletes that went to college on a scholarship and graduated. And now we have about, I think it's about 7 in college now as we speak, on, you know, full scholarship. And I think that's the main thing there. And that's why I keep doing it and keep going, because I was supposed to retire from this a long time ago. But then parents will say, you know, get a freshman, and then you become attached to that freshman and looking at their potentials and what they can do. And then, well, you know, well, I'll stay 4 years, you go out, then you find another freshman. And you know that, and you do it because you know what the outcome gonna be. You know, everyone do not have that opportunity or the financial capability to sit down and write a check for their daughter to go to college out their pocket. So I figured that this would be one way that I could help them, one avenue that I could employ to help them go from point A to point B. And if that mean not paying nothing or paying a little something, it helps quite a bit. So when I look at their accomplishment, and I look at many of them now who are doctors and lawyers, who have ran track, you know, it's just makes a big difference to me, because at that point, I can say that well done is better than well said, and that they will give back to the society, and that this cycle could continue, and hopefully that they will do the same thing in whatever avenue they choose, that they find how they can help someone get to the next level as well. So this is why I do this.
Love it, Coach. Every time you think you're out, they keep pulling you back in. Yeah,
it's just so amazing. I mean, not just building these student athletes on the track, but shaping them into the future leaders of tomorrow. So that's an amazing accomplishment. And also another really deserving accolade you just earned recently, the Beaufort High track now holds your name. What does that mean to have your legacy kept right on that track from now on, after so many years of your incredible dedication to these student athletes?
Oh, that's amazing. And I thank the School Improvement Council and my principal, Ms. Summers, for them doing that. You know, Ms. Summers, she's an amazing principal. She told me that when they were doing the track, I was to go out there and meet some of the people. That was on a Tuesday, because they are going to build other track in the area. And they just wanted some input as to what do I think about this track. So I'm talking to all the, you know, big dignitaries out there and thinking that I'm going to speak at that board meeting that night. So I'm getting my notes together, what I'm going to say to them and tell them. So the board meeting started. So we were all on Zoom. And then after, you know, half hour or so, they said, well, we'll now entertain this. And then one of the board members got up and said, this is a decision, a recommendation that's coming from the School Improvement Council, as well as from the Summers from Beaufort High School, that they're going to, and by full recommendation from the board, that they named the track the Herbert Nathaniel Glias track. And that took me, because I was expecting something else, and this is what they did. And I feel honored by that. I mean, it's, you know, it's, like I said, well done is better than well said. And, you know, you give a person their flower while they live, while they can smell it, while they can see it. And to get to this point, when I look back over the years as to when I first started the girls track program at Beaufort High School, when I look over the years, and I was only coaching the girls track, that was 10 state championship and 2 state runner-up. I never coached the boys track, all we worked together as one. But you look back at that and look at what you went through and the struggle that you give, and you know, you just devoted your life to something that you love doing, and not realizing from the first time we started, basically pretty much a dirt track, and then pave it, but not necessarily the necessary material that you would have, but material that they would have on a highway, to use that, which was better than none. And then to come to this particular point today, when you look back and say how I got over, how it was, the struggle that you know, came along with the challenges that you did. I mean, we've gone places. I've taken my girls to Florida, Atlanta, to Tennessee, because I realized that the more exposure they get, the better it is for them. You see, and when you are doing your application or whatnot, or they're going to colleges and whatnot, and I know basically quite a bit of those coaches, I mean, all over, you know, and they would call and ask about certain kids, and I say yes. And just by me saying yes, you know, they say, well, that's good enough for us. Yep. Because it saves a lot for Buford High on the type of track program that we run here, that we know that we put into it what we can, and we get the best out of the kids, and they give their full effort. So like I tell them, anytime we get off a bus, or anytime we go someplace, there's a big target on your back, and you have a big bullseye, and they're trying to get you. So we always, you know, I tell them, my main thing is this: pride plus respect equal success. Yes, you got to have, that's my motto. You got to have pride in yourself. If you don't have enough pride in yourself, you're not gonna have no respect for anyone else. You can't respect others until you respect yourself. So pride plus respect will equal success if you work at it. Because like I tell them, hard work beat talent, and talent will work hard. So nothing comes easy. And nothing in life without a sacrifice can be accomplished. So as long as they know that, and we are one big team. We are various components, but we all come together as one. And that's what we got to look at. We are all one here.
Well, Coach, your influence on the track and in the schools has been tremendous, obviously. But you spent 20 years on the Buford County Council and continue to be involved on the board of directors on the Low Country Council of Governments and started the Citizens Against Violence Everywhere in 2008. So why do you feel it's important for folks like you or me or Wes, even, you know, just ordinary people in the community who are out there to get involved in, you know, local government, local issues, and just try to, you know, do their part to make this a better place?
Yeah, well, the first thing I say, you got to have, and that applies to life in general, pride plus respect equals success. Because if you don't have pride in yourself, then no one going to respect you because of that pride that you lacking in yourself. And then you have to have, in order for you to lead, you have to be able to follow. So by you following, you have observation. People see what you're doing. And then they'll say, well, this person here is doing pretty good. He's all right. He's this and that. I can learn from him. I can respect him, his integrity, his leadership. I trust him. I respect him. I have respect for him. And that transcends within the community. You see what I'm saying? And it affords you the opportunity to be able to get people to come together as one. When I start this, the cave, Citizens Against Violence Everywhere. And that started when I was on county council with all the violence that was actually happening in Buford County, but especially in the Burton area.
Yeah.
And as I was in my bed sleeping, and about 3 or 4 in the morning, I was sleeping and I wasn't sleeping, but my pillows were soaked with water. And I said, and like I had a dream, but I wasn't sleeping. And I dreamt that I was in this cave. And as I was walking around in that cave, compared to how it is today at that time, as I walk around that cave, it looked as though it was prehistoric times. And I look on the walls and I saw all the hieroglyphics, all the writing and the drawings, and how they had beautiful faces and had beautiful people. and you could see the peace and harmony in that cave. I felt so good in that cave. I said, man, this is so nice here. This is peaceful. And then when I walked out of the cave, I saw people died with daggers in their chest, axe in the head, you know, violence, not but violence. And I was witnessing that from inside to outside the cave. And then I woke up, and like I went back to sleep, and something came to me and said, what are you going to do about that? And that's when I came with CAVE, Citizens Against Violence Everywhere. And I met, at that time, the county administrator. I met with Sheriff Tanner, all the solicitors, all the stockholders and whatnot, stakeholders in Beaufort County, to get this established, and working ever since. You know, but it's the violence. So you got to have that leadership ability. And you got to be able to work with people across the board, because so much can be accomplished when no one wants to take the blame as to the success. Because if it's successful, everyone want to take the blame. If it's not, no one want to take the blame. So I believe that once you get people involved and get them engaged, and you have a purpose and an agenda, that's not your agenda, but it's the people agenda, I think it makes a big difference.
I noticed you, there's no room for ego in your equation there, Coach. It's pride plus respect. There's no ego in there. That doesn't lead to success, does it?
Yes, sir.
I want to hear your thoughts about what's happened across the country involving racial injustice. We just need to do such a better job as a country in every way to end these inequalities that has no place in our country or our world. And I'm very saddened by all that's continuing all over the country, but I'm very optimistic and I'm very proud of what our young people are doing in the Lowcountry to inspire that change. How proud are you of these local kids, Black, white, Latino, all races coming together to really promote equality?
I'm very proud. I think that it makes a big difference, because the younger kids are the kids, a generation for tomorrow, and they can see what's actually going on, and they are able to tell what's right and what's wrong. So by doing this, it allows them the opportunity to work together. You know, as I was looking at the inauguration of Biden the other day, and then I look at the activities that occurred on January the 6th. And then there's something came in my mind, and this was saying, you know, what's going on in the world today? And I think the main thing that we're lacking is more dangerous than the coronavirus. It's more dangerous, COVID-19 is more dangerous than forest fires. It's more dangerous than an earthquake. It's more dangerous than flood. It's more dangerous than storm. It's more dangerous than hurricane and fire. All these are elements of nature that occur, if you notice, throughout the world in various places. But of them all, the most dangerous one is hate. And I think hate is what's triggering what's going on now. And I said to myself, remember that we as a people of the human race, we are the human race, must not harbor hate in our hearts, clogging our arteries with platelets of racial discrimination, evilness, bitterness, oppression toward one another because of one's phenotype or genotype. But I believe that to make this a better world, we must instead harbor love for all humans. We must undergo a great mutation or a change, change, a change, And a change to me is Christians having a new goal every day. That's what I call a change. So what this world needs is a healing. And by my Christian faith, I believe that James 5 and 15 said, God heals, faith doesn't. And all prayers are subject to God's will. But our prayers are part of God's process. So I believe that the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. So remember that when faithfulness is most difficult, it's more necessary. So I believe that the whole thing around us is centered around harboring hate in our heart and not love for the human race. And I think that that's the catalyst that allowed this reaction to continue. And until we look at everyone as a human race, as somebody, but not harbor hate in our heart, it's a hardened heart. And that's what happened when your heart is hardened. Darkness is the only light around. Because even in the valley of the blind, a one-eyed man is king. So we have to adhere and work as a unit, work together to make things happen. So I look at the young generation as being that particular catalyst for a change to make things happen. And once they cohesify themselves that they're doing now, you will see a better world. Because they do not necessarily see color, they see justice, they see equality. And that's what the older folks have a blurred vision to and they can't see. So I believe that with the young folks being engaged as they are, I think America will come back as they were.
Amen, Coach. In South Carolina, we say, while I breathe, I hope. And I'm hopeful for the future thanks to folks like you and the work you've done over the past 4+ decades to prepare, you know, these future generations for a better life, a better way. And on that note, I think, Coach, we'll wrap it up and we'll definitely have to bring you back on to open up your library once again sometime, because you're just incredible wealth of knowledge, history, and wisdom. And you busted out some of my favorite sayings today, but you taught me a few new ones too. So we sure appreciate you taking your time, opening up that library and sharing your story with us, Coach.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. And I appreciate you all for having me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Coach, for joining us. This has been the Loco Sit Down. You can catch it on the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast, available wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, go Loco.